By the end of the next day, order had been restored to much of McDowell's force, and Washington really wasn't in danger. If there was any moment when the Confederates really could have exploited this victory, it was on the afternoon of July 21st, but the Confederate Army was just about as disorganized in victory as the Union Army was in defeat. Jefferson Davis had ridden out to the field late in the day, president of the Confederacy. He had urged a pursuit. Stonewall Jackson had hoped to be able to pursue, but Joseph Johnston said, no, darkness is coming. We are very much confused. Our units intermingled with one another. We'll have to wait and reassess the situation tomorrow. Whether or not there was a real opportunity is up in the air. The point is Johnston did not try to push it, and the Federal Army escaped and gathered itself in Washington and was something like an effective force by the next day. Whatever opportunity there had been was gone. Now let's look at the battle as representative of other Civil War battles. Of the war, of the many battles in the war, this one showed several things that we'll see again and again. One is the attempt to avoid a frontal assault. As we've said, both sides tried to get around the other side's flank. It showed the side with interior lines making good use of that feature, both strategically on the Confederate side and then tactically on the Confederate side as well, reinforcing one part of their line from another. We will see those again and again. We'll see as well that when an army or a piece of an army was driven from the field, it often had the resiliency to gather itself and put up a stand and not be utterly destroyed. The Union Army showed this at Manassas, and we'll see it again and again during the war. At Chancellorsville, for example, Stonewall Jackson's flank attack utterly routed one entire Union corps, but the rest of the army simply pulled itself into a position, the rest of the Union Army, to resist Jackson's attack. At Chickamauga, a third of the entire Federal Army was driven from the field en route, but the rest managed to pull itself together and stave off a terrible defeat. So these are things that that are anticipated at Manassas that we'll see again and again in the war. Let's talk just a minute in closing here about the results of the battle. First, the casualties. The casualties by later Civil War standards were not high, really quite modest. It would be a mid-sized battle later in the war. About 18,000 men on each side actually got into the fight. The Federals lost 1,500 killed and wounded and another 1,200 missing. Most of those missing were captured, although some may have been mortally wounded and just crawled off and died or something, but most captured. The South lost about 2,000 men. So 2,000 on the Confederate side, 2,700 on the Federal side. Later in the war, as I said, this would be considered a mid-sized battle or even a modest-sized battle. But here in July of 1861, it's an enormous battle, the biggest battle in United States history, with far more casualties than any other battle had. It seemed like a ghastly bloodletting to the people at the time. The South, of course, took heart from the Battle of First Manassas. They thought they were well on their way to winning the war. Morale in the North, civilian morale, was depressed. It seemed that the war now was going to drag on, and it actually made most people in the North more resolute, determined to make whatever sacrifices would be necessary to win the war. For many Confederates, it seemed that the notion that one Southerner could whip two or three Yankees or however many Yankees might be true. They didn't pay attention to the fine details that they'd actually been losing the battle until late in the contest when the tide turned. There has been some speculation by scholars that this early defeat at Manassas actually had a tremendous long-term psychological impact on the Union Army in the East, that the Union Army for many, many months or even years after this expected to be defeated when they went up against the Confederates, that there really was a sort of First Manassas syndrome in the Northern Army. That's very hard either to prove or disprove, but I offer it to you as something that some scholars have thought existed after this battle. Whether or not that's true, it was clear to everyone in the North that stamping out the rebellion was not going to be a one-battle affair, which is what many people had thought before the Battle of First Manassas. Now, there were not going to be any more big battles in Virginia in 1861. This was going to be the biggest one the only big one for the whole year in Virginia. And so the effects of Manassas lingered. The impressions from the battle held on for a long time. That is, impressions of Confederate success and of Union failure would hold on for a long time after the last soldiers had left what were called the Rolling Plains of Manassas at the time. We're going to leave the battlefield with this lecture, and we're going to move briefly to a consideration of the Great Border in our next lecture and see how Lincoln's administration coped with a political rather than a military problem.